This is board time, Wednesday, 24 June at 2:45.
Councilor Bedore, Mike Burgess contacted me earlier today.
Oh, yeah.
There is a legislative matter that he would like to discuss with the board. He is not available after 3. He's standing by. Do I have your permission to get him on the phone?
Let me just ask you, Vanessa, you're here. Thank you very much. If our item with your contract is brief, we might be able to cover it in just a couple of minutes. That way you can, because you got plenty on your plate.
Okay.
Why don't we handle you first? So, Vanessa Gessen, welcome.
So, good afternoon, Counselor. So, this is an interlocal agreement between the county and Southwest Regional Support Network to actually ask for about 25% of my time monthly for me to work as their interim administrator. They had the same agreement with the Timberland RSN for Brian Cameron. That ends June 30th, and this is to start July 1st through the end of the operations for Southwest Behavioral Health. So basically, we've worked out agreement. I've talked to HR. Legal counsel has taken a look at it. I've agreed to 10 hours per week, and then full-time on my job. And to be honest with you, I've been doing the work prior. They just haven't been paying me. So now they actually start paying me.
And we've seen that work. And Vanessa, let me just add that to a bit. Because Skamania County and Clark County are the only two counties in the RSN right now. The board is a two-member board, Chris Brong from Skamania County, myself for Clark County, and was it our last meeting that we approved this contract with you, Vanessa?
Yes.
And we're, so on our part for the RSN, we've approved it.
Yes.
And you've demonstrated for a long time now, certainly like you're very able and you're the obvious right choice to fill this position, and I'm thankful that you're willing to spare the bandwidth to head that up.
Thank you.
So I have a question. What's in the contract?
So basically what's in the contract is basically the same interlocal disagreement about the county agrees to share or not share but to allow 25% of my time, and they specific about up to 10 hours per week, that I have to disclose any conflict of interest because the county is a part of Southwest Behavioral Health.
I highlighted it.
And then I would say HR worked to incorporate a percentage of my salary, which includes taxes and benefits, for 25%. And then any actual travel that I do for Southwest Behavioral Health, I can't charge the county, I would charge them. My department will process all of that and charge up to 10% admin for processing that. And I report to that board. And we'll meet monthly with the different board members and attend any meetings related to Southwest Behavioral Health Division. We are going to reorganize, so and we will talk at the RSN board meeting about that so that we can assign someone to do day-to-day activities at the RSN.
Okay, my concern was the RSN was supposed to save us money and not be a financial hardship, but it did cost us money. In fact, we lost $500,000 in the transition. So that was my concern, that the RSN didn't take on that responsibility of picking up that portion of your
cost. And they will pay. And they will pay for it.
Yeah.
And then we are transitioning them out, so that one of my tasks is to make sure they don't cost the county any more money when they transition it.
Very good. That's it. That's all I have.
Okay. Any questions for you, Commissioner?
No.
Okay.
I do have a question.
Okay.
So this will be a formal interlocal agreement that will go to a formal board meeting.
We've already voted at the RSA.
We're approving it here.
We're approving this here.
Their part.
Right.
So, in other words, this Board of Counselors needs to ratify and agree to, because this is a contract between Clark County saying we're willing to share you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the additional hours, the 10 hours, up to 10 hours you've got to put in for the RSM, is that in addition to the full-time work in Clark County?
Okay. I've agreed to work 7 to 5 and give them my lunch hour and any additional time.
So in other words, for Clark County, there is no difference in our cost. No. You're putting in extra time for them.
Yes.
Well, this requires a legal interlocal, and my question is, we can do resolutions out of here, but why aren't we seeing the, interlocals? Why wouldn't we see it, though, in a regular meeting? Is it that the time is of the essence of this?
This takes effect July 1.
July 1, and our next official board meeting? I mean, we can agree to it now, but actually adopt the interlocal at our next regular board meeting. Is that correct? Is there any problem with that?
Please don't slow government down any more than it already is.
What?
Please don't slow government down any more than it already is.
I just want to make sure that what we do in here is not outside of the range of what we do in our legal, in our more formal meetings.
The action that you take, you are authorized to take official final action in board time, because you're in a, as long as it only requires an open public meeting. The only action you can't take in these kinds of meetings are actions that require a public hearing, because we don't take testimony under your procedures in board time. So public hearings would go on Tuesday's agenda. Typically, you don't normally adopt these in board time, but there's no prohibition on doing so. You could, or you could do it in consent on next Tuesday. There's no requirement one way or the other. You have the flexibility to do it either way.
Yes.
So the action before us today would be just simply for us to vote on approving this interlocal agreement. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
If that's the board's vote.
I would suggest that because the future of this board, the RSN, needs to be stable. We need to make sure that all those employees know that they know that there is leadership at the top, that we don't in any way delay that unnecessarily. We have the freedom to get this done today. Unless there's some reservations, I suggest we do so. We would be open for a motion.
And my point is not the need for this. My point is anything that we can do on a regular consent meeting in a regular published time, we should encourage as much to be done through that process as we can. This, because time is of the essence, I would move that we would approve this interlocal agreement, but that's not even what the item says we're doing. It just is vague, interim SWBH, which nobody will understand, director. So somewhere we'll have to make it clear that what we're actually doing in here is approving an interlocal agreement.
Is this document published with the board documents on the grid?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then it's been out there. Okay, so that's a motion?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
Any more discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes.
Thanks, Vanessa.
Okay, while he's dialing.
You got 5 minutes.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, while he's dialing, I will tell you that I'm here only because the board entered, in 2001, the board entered into an interlocal agreement for, might even be then slightly before that, but the board entered into an interlocal agreement to finance 800 megahertz construction for software and towers. We committed as a part of that to require the participants to pay for it, and that payment, final payment, is currently in place.
Yes.
The agreement calls for us.
We're in the middle of board time. Can you hold for a sec?
Sure.
That agreement calls for us to transfer the agreement to, or the equipment to Cressa, excluding the building and the real property under the building at the Cressa location on 13th Street. So all the other equipment would be transferred to Cressa pursuant to our previously entered into interlocal agreement. So what's before you today is the approval of that transfer.
Okay. In other words, they paid for it.
Yep.
And so that it belongs to them, and we're just simply making sure that the title is free and clear.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
The motion would be, is there a
motion to approve the transfer of the equipment consistent with, you should have, is there a resolution?
Yep.
Yeah,
right here.
Yep. Consistent with the resolution that we've prepared for your signatures.
Okay.
For the transfer of this
equipment.
Is that a motion?
I want to have a discussion about it.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, and in fairness to Mike, he's...
Let's do it.
All right. Well, wait.
Okay, Mike, go ahead. You have all three board members here.
Okay. Thanks, counselors, for your time today. I'm sorry to kind of jam you on this one, but stuff popped up in the last few days in Olympia that I wanted to get your take on and get your direction on. You have likely read that we're in Olympia today, and some budget negotiations are going on. And those things have been going on for the last 8 weeks, but they're really going to get going now, given that the final day of the second special session is actually Saturday, facing the government shutdown on, well, I think it's like next Monday or Tuesday, if they don't get there. One of the components, though, the thing that popped up in the last few days, the House Democrats walked away from their proposal for a capital gains tax increase. That was kind of the big revenue piece they were holding out for. It was about $550 million. They walked away from that, but have replaced it with another bill full of removing or doing away with all kinds of different tax exemptions. Among them, the non-resident sales tax exemption. This is not a new concept to you. We've talked about it in years past. We haven't talked about it this year probably as much other than in passing, only because it was on the table, but I didn't think it was seriously on the table the way it is now. And so I didn't seek a direction from you on it until now. Essentially what it is, you've probably read some of the newspaper accounts of it, but it would do away with it, or essentially turn it into a rebate program, and you would have to, in simplest terms, you would pool your receipts if you were a non-resident. You'd pool your receipts and then submit to the Department of Revenue for a refund. Your refund amount would have to be at least $25. And so, by turning it into the rebate program, obviously, I assume you're making the assumption that not everyone would seek the rebate, and that's the way it generates more revenue for the state, also taking into account that you have to have a rebate of at least $25. So, you know, the smaller purchases would no longer receive the sales tax exemption for the non-resident. I'm not 100% that it is on the table. It was in this larger revenue bill that the House put forward. I'm hearing things on both sides that the Senate won't even consider it. But again, I just wanted to get your opinion on it, given that we're getting into a time crunch. And I want to relay that to your delegation if that's what you would like me to do. That's pretty quick and dirty, but if you have any other questions about it, please feel free to ask.
Mike, do you have to step out at 3 o'clock sharp?
I have a few extra minutes.
Okay, so we'll try to be concise. Did you have a question?
Yes. So I don't know what this would mean to us in Clark County for total sales that might be impacted, and that would be even somewhat speculation, because we do know which sales are sales tax exempt because people show Oregon ID. Do you have any idea what the dollar amount is?
No, off the top of my head, I don't. Okay. Counselor, I have to go back and look at the fiscal note and get that to you, which is something I could do. I should have said to you also, this would only be the state portion of the sales tax. The local portions would stay in place.
Oh, local portion stays in tax?
Local would stay. This would only be the state portion, which is 6.5%.
In other words, they would not pay, or if they're an Oregon resident, they would not pay the local sales tax.
No, sir. They would pay it. So if you're an Oregon resident, you go into a store, you go to Best Buy, and you buy a DVD player, you will now pay the sales tax.
Whereas right now,
you're not.
Okay.
And then when you get it rebated to you, they will rebate you the state portion as long as it's in excess of $25 annually.
I see. Tom, you got something?
No, I think you covered it. I think that because when you first started off, I had a real problem with doing away with it. It's very critical for Clark County to maintain that exemption for Oregon purchasers. But it's still there. The only thing that they add is that they have to apply for it to get it back.
Correct.
It'll still have, incrementally moving forward, an enormous impact on sales, because sales revenue in the hole, because when people see how difficult and how long it is to get that back, shopping here won't be done for that reason. It would end up being for other reasons they shop here.
Councilor Stewart, you summarized the Retail Association's arguments and kind of the general business community argument against the bill, or against that provision of the bill.
Yeah. I'm worried about one other aspect here. You did say that the House Democrats were willing to eliminate their prospect for capital gains tax, but they're hoping to recover that revenue through a variety of other new or expanded taxations. I'd be really interested in that aspect of what's going on.
What some of those other ones are?
Yes.
A couple of them deal with the internet marketplace fairness and where nexus occurs, where the sales takes place. And so, you know, some internet sales right now are taxed, some aren't. This would clarify when that all happens. Bottled water is one of them. They would be placing, the current proposal would place the sales tax on bottled water, just like it is on a, you know, when you buy a 16-ounce bottle of pop or whatever, you pay the sales tax then. The sales tax would apply to bottled water. There's a couple, three other ones, the menu, but they add up to about $380 million. And again, I am not certain. I think bottled water is certainly in play, but I am not as certain on the non-resident that we're discussing. But again, I wanted to get your position on it if you wanted to.
Well, the Washington state law already exists that if you buy something on the internet, you are required to pay state and local sales tax, and it depends on either your billing address or the ship-to address of the online purchases.
Right. You're supposed to pay the use tax, but I don't think that's very well observed, to be honest with you. So,
There's nothing I've ordered on the internet that they do not collect the full sales tax. The state and the local, depending on your zip code,
right,
or the calculation and the point of delivery or use.
Okay. Well, I can get you, let me get you greater detail on that one, how they're sourced it, because it's a different proposal than they had earlier in session. They've changed it a bit, but I can certainly get you the details on that.
Can I ask a question?
But specific to the non-resident, simply because of the border county that you are, do you have any other comments on that?
Does this in any way increase the net B&O taxes that businesses pay in some of this other category of raising taxes?
I'm sorry, say that again, Counselor?
You said there's other taxes that are being increased.
Oh, in that bill. Yeah, no, there's not. The B&O issue is off the table as well.
Okay, so when they say they're trying to close loopholes, in other words, they're trying to remove business incentives, what's anything substantial in that category?
Well, again, the bottled water is a pretty big chunk. The nexus, the internet sale issue is a big one. There's one that deals with the foreclosures and REIT taxes that the banks would pay, or the real estate excise tax right now, they get some sort of a credit. There's also one on extracted fuel that the refineries do, their credit would remove. But you're right, it's a removal of a lot of, credits or exemptions.
Yeah.
In some cases, sales tax.
At this point, when you say the refinery, here we have, the non-competitiveness of them locating energy sources for our area compared to other areas in the country. To me, that makes me wonder. I don't know enough about it. How is our local delegation standing on what's proposed?
Well, specific to the non-resident sales tax, I believe that the majority in the House, the Democrats, have voiced support for it in the past. In fact, some of your local legislators have sponsored bills to repeal it in years past. And generally speaking, it was a party line vote coming out of committee, and you have a few Republican members, local folks, on the committee that were in opposition to it out of committee.
Okay.
Into the giant, the full tax bill itself. And the general argument from the Republicans is the state has brought in $3.5 billion-ish more just by any of. There's no need for new revenue.
Yep.
But again, these things are subject to compromise, and negotiations are going on as we speak.
Yeah.
And again, I wanted to relay a position that you all might have on the non-resident portion, given you are a border county and the county in Type L have.
Yeah, and just briefly, because I know you got to go, I agree with our local delegation, the ones that are actually count their role as representatives of the people, that we don't need sales or we don't need tax increases when we're still recovering. So I am opposed, and we can each voice that anything that's going to raise taxes on top of the how much is it already increasing by just simply growth, I would say I'm opposed to it. No new taxes, no tax increase.
You know, if they were to break that out, Mike, it'd almost be palatable, but the way it's lumped together, I'm also opposed.
Okay.
And Mike,
Councilor Stewart?
Yes. So regarding their elimination or suggested elimination of B&O tax credits, although that doesn't raise the B&O rate they pay, it raises the amount of B&O tax they pay. So I want to be real cautious about that as well, because that is the whole structure of B&O. It's an ominous tax, and when we eliminate credits for certain businesses, that can equate to a huge amount of tax dollar increase, even if it doesn't increase the percentage rate for them.
Well put.
Concern.
So, I'm hearing opposition to the tax increases in general, but specifically to the non-resident removal as well.
Well, I would say any of the tax increases I am opposed to. We already have substantial revenue increases that, what, almost 10%. That should be enough for them to be able to put it to good use.
Okay, I think I've got what I need. I will relay that to the delegation, and you know, look for some emails from me in the next few days as this shakes loose up here.
Thank you. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
All right, thank you all. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay.
You want to get back, Chris?
Sure. Councilor, I know you had questions regarding the transfer. If it helps, I can either read the language from the agreement.
No.
Okay.
It's the same question as I raised before. This is a resolution. I don't see any reason that this would not be a resolution that we could do in a normal CCVOC meeting. In this case, the description on this agenda, if it's posted on the web exactly in that way, people would know maybe to look for this document and read it. But it's, I don't see any reason to do more in the board time than we really need to do in this venue and outside of our normal structured meetings. And that we have the authority to do it isn't the question here, that we have the authority to do this. This isn't an emergency item.
No, it absolutely isn't.
So I'm going to make a motion that we move it to our regular Clark County Board Commission. Would it be on a consent?
Sure. It would go. And, it would go.
And put it just as a consent item.
Sure, it could go next Tuesday, in fact.
And that's fine. There's no consequence of this. This doesn't. Then I'm good with that too.
It's not a denial. It's just.
I have an issue. This is a tail end of an existing contract.
Sure.
Where the bond is paid off. All we're doing is just the closing of it. This is a final thing that's already been in the hearing and gone forward. This is the tail end of it upon the completion of the bonding that we sign the equipment to them.
That's all understood, but all of that bonding and every other part of this transaction would have gone through our regular board meeting, and I'm just asking that the completion of it follow that same process.
So I have a motion on the table.
Let me speak. Collect my thoughts here. The transparency that we brought as a number one priority here is that we record all of these meetings, and that we publish on the grid all the documents that come into these meetings, and that we, that coupled with the history that this board does regular business in this meeting, that's not just simply things that are emergency, but we do day-to-day business here so that we can move things along and keep things flowing and keep people tuned in to this meeting as well as that the regular VOCC meetings. With that transparency, knowing that this is relatively new, we didn't used to have that kind of transparency, we didn't publish these documents, it's all there. I would like to continue the normal, traditional, getting the work of the people done on an effective basis. If there's something that's non-controversial, just simply a routine kind of work, I have no problem getting the work of the people done in this meeting. It's just as a valid public meeting as the other one, as the one out there. So I just want to make sure we don't. Sometimes there's unintended consequences. We kind of restrict ourselves that make the wheels of government turn slower than they need to. So because we have good transparency, because all these documents are out there, I like to be able to get this done as much in this meeting as the other meetings. So I'm good with continuing that.
So as a rebuttal to that.
Sure.
My concern is this. We might pass a resolution in here. We might pass it in the other meeting. What was our other document here that we have today? An interlocal. We might pass an interlocal in here if we feel like it, or it might go to our regular meeting. I think we need to make a distinction between the work that we do in here and the work that we do in our regular meetings. And sometimes things come into this meeting that are urgent or critical, or we need a very quick turnaround time on, and I would never want us not to be able to do that. This is a routine item, mm-hmm. And I don't think we should have processes that are so linear that our hands are tied. But I do think we should have standard practices, and this is not an emergency item, and I think that we should develop standards for not hard and fast rules, but basic standards that routine items go through a routine process, and this. I'm bringing this up, and I brought it up on both of these, because the longer I'm here, the longer board time. I mean, when the first couple months I was here, board times were pretty fast, but it feels like we're doing more and more of these other things that we could do in our regular meetings. And I think people like to know where they can see us doing our work. And they expect to see it in the hearing room during regular hearing time. And these would mostly be consent items, but somebody could see them in advance, and they could come in, and they would know that's their forum to come in and say, okay, this is your chance to, because we do that in the other meeting on consent items. We say, is there any public comment on these consent items? So I just want to, I don't want hard and fast linear rules that tie our hands, but I want there to be a reasonable process that we typically use for things.
Okay.
And for that reason, my motion is still out there because I stand by it. So.
I couldn't agree with you more about having a more distinct thing. this is something that's already had a hearing. In fact, I'm surprised that we would even have to do this, Chris, because we've already had the hearing. We already signed the contract, and in the contract it says when the bond is paid off, the equipment is transferred over to Cressa. So I'm surprised we even have to do this. That's how small I see this as being.
Well, the county owns this equipment. It's listed on our books. It's listed in our finances, and you take action through resolution. It doesn't say it shall become the property of. It obligates us to transfer it. So it takes some action to affect that transfer, and this resolution affects the transfer. So we're living up to our commitment.
Yeah.
We previously made the commitment. This just does the last step of that, which transfers affects the transfer.
Okay. This is essentially a housekeeping thing.
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying it does take some action. I don't think it's automatic.
So the purpose of having the resolution is to help with the transparency.
Well, the contract. Board takes action by resolution.
Yeah, okay. But the contract could have also said upon completion the assets would be transferred.
The resolution or the agreement could have been written differently.
Sure. So, are you done?
I'm done. I don't see the need to drag this out. It would be nice to get the paperwork done. It's not done here. We just pass it on. It goes through our legal department, and something is given to Cressa to show the ownership.
Okay. If I can respond, first I'll second the motion. I just want to make sure that in our attempt to maximize transparency and maximize the opportunity for citizens to voice and even for staff or Cressa to be able to appear at a meeting and be able to tell us a little bit more about this thing, the more formal meeting out there does provide for that. So I want to make sure that we're not establishing a standard that we will always do that kind of thing.
And I'm, of course, not asking that.
And I think you've made that clear. So for the sake of this, you made a compelling argument. I'm convinced. And so I support for several reasons. One, TV coverage is better than audio coverage.
Yes.
It gives opportunity for anybody in the public to participate. That's one of the differences between a board time meeting and a BOCC meeting out there. So it allows us to, if there be anything that we're missing, it gives opportunity for anybody to bring that forward and bring it to our attention, even if it looks like it's a no-brainer routine stuff. So for those reasons, which you expressed already, I support the idea of moving this to the consent item, consent agenda, for a regular meeting. Any more discussion?
Nope.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 And one nay. Okay, so motion
passes. Okay, so
in fact, there was a day that we made a formal announcement or vote. There was a day that you just gave a nod, and we had two nods. That's all you had. You've come a long ways in transparency and formalities that you made a second hearing. This is like having a hearing. The difference is you don't have public testimony.
Yeah. And
But the reality is we're actually transferring equipment to you.
According to contract.
I don't think anybody... I don't know, but see, here's what I don't want to sit here and dream up and make up out of my own imagination. Who might want to testify on something and not have an opportunity versus, you know, we're sure somebody would want to in the other meeting. I don't want to try to draw those conclusions. I want that left open to the citizens.
All right, so I agree.
You can't vote no against transferring the equipment. That's my point.
Well, at this point, that may be true, but if I don't feel strongly about this.
I think you just voted no, Tom.
I don't feel strongly about this, but if there's
it's
an area
point.
Where we have the freedom to be more transparent, the tie goes to the transparency. Okay, so thank you very much. So we can move back to 1.1 for the approval of the minutes.
I move for approval.
I'll second.
Okay, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Minutes are approved. That was for June 10. Okay, Commissioner reports. Counselor?
I have no report.
Okay, Counselor?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Give me a second.
I do have some things I'm working on, but I'll bring them forward.
You can have,
later
you can have
time.
A redo when you're ready.
I think Counselor Milkey's going to set a record today. It looks like he's
I'm going to skip over. I know that we have a TIF. The new TIF districts are coming forward to a to be presented to us?
Yes.
I think those just went to the PC this week.
And for staff, I was going to have you take a look at the speed limit on Lucia Falls Road. And why would that be different? I thought it was 50. I drive 50 on it. So I wanted to follow up and get a more current thing on the paint store. I think okay. We had an offer. I'm just throwing them out here.
Okay, can I respond to one or two of them?
Quick as you can.
Okay, on the TIP work session.
Yeah, it's coming up, I know.
Yeah, 29 July at 9 o'clock, we have a work session. And then he's looking into a possible hearing date on August 11th.
And that's to lower the TIFs?
Well, it's to redesign the TIF district layout to go from however many we have now to some smaller number.
Without a change in, well, each of those districts had different rates, right?
Geez, you know, it's been so long since I've dealt with TIF rates.
Okay.
I can't remember whether they had different rates or not.
I think they did.
But we've had a TIF task force looking into making the rates more current and also redistricting so that we have more flexibility in how we spend the TIF money. So that's all on track.
Okay.
Now, the Miller Paint Store.
Miller Paint Store.
You know, we just granted.
Are we moving?
We are. I think Peter's got some information. Okay. I think we have till the end of the month that their first right expires at the end of June. There has been an issue with parking.
I have no idea what we're talking about.
At the new intersection at 139th, it's the Salmon Creek Interchange project.
Okay, I know 139th and what?
On the
Avenue.
On the east side of I-5, 20th Avenue and 139th intersect.
Okay.
Southwest corner of that intersection is a Miller Paint Store.
Yes.
Used to be Miller Paint.
Yes.
They moved north into the Hollywood Video Store.
Okay.
And that building is now vacant.
Okay.
There's
it's
a chiropractor.
And it's kind of landlocked.
Building.
Yeah, we own it.
It's ours.
Didn't we vacate it?
We own it. It's unoccupied.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a chiropractor who owns a building just to the south.
Yeah.
He has first right of refusal on that building. He wants to buy it. He's working with community development.
Really?
There was a question about parking spots on the north side of the building because we just granted an easement to WashDOT.
Yeah.
So the people downstairs thought, okay, well, if there's an easement there, then you can't count those spaces as part of the occupancy requirement for that building. Well, WashDOT has said that those parking spots are available to the building owner unless they need access to the stormwater facility to perform maintenance. Okay, so now Marty can include those parking spaces in the number relating to the building, which allows it to be used for an intended purpose. So we think that that's the last of the issues regarding that building, and now the guy's got to make the offer.
So on that property, if you are southbound, you can get in there. If you're northbound, you can't turn left to get in there. You have to go up and find some place to turn around
and
come back out
conditions
and go
like
in because it's like...
Who put those curbs there, huh?
Well, that's all that complex.
It's all designed to prevent accidents.
Yeah. Okay.
So
I didn't even know that property was usable.
Oh yeah,
it is.
And it was hard to get to that paint store.
Yeah.
Well, it's just as easy to access the old paint store as it is the chiropractor.
Yes, exactly.
Because they share an entrance.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
So
we're very fortunate that the neighbor next door is interested, because there's a real issue. I think the value of that would bottom out
if he didn't get
it, because access, not enough parking spots, and
so
all that.
So are we talking about, so WashDOT owns that?
We do.
We own it.
Yes.
Are we going to sell it?
We're going to sell it to the...
But he needed to know if he'd have adequate parking to allow him to gain from buying it.
By county regulation, we have to have so many parking spots.
Right.
Depending on the intended use.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're doing great
then. I'm with you then.
Okay.
So if the neighbor doesn't buy it because he has first right, then it'll take approximately 5 months to put it back in the process to auction it off.
Okay.
So I wanted to share with my colleagues that I'm going to bring something forward to readdress our TIF holiday in the conversations of several developers that we've had here. They've been reluctant to start new construction projects because of the time it takes to go through the steps. And what I'd done, I'd gone back and I'd asked one of the developing engine lawyers to give me a time frame of what it takes to do every step along the way so that we can come back and make these developers feel comfortable if they want to move forward with the development. They don't want to get started into a developing process and then find out that we cut them off the fee holiday, but they want to start building because of the fee holiday. So I'm going to bring something back to you to readdress what we have out there.
Okay, so that really should be not just a commissioner initiative, but a county initiative.
It will get there.
Well, I mean when it gets to final action, but how do we work this so that, because you're right, I have people calling me all the time saying, so, well, when are you guys going to end that?
Yeah.
Or are you talking about it? Or are you going to phase it out?
Yeah.
And they don't, on a 5-year project that they have to accumulate the funding for, they need predictability. And if they don't know how long those fees are going to be in place, and we did talk about it here one day, and I thought the feedback was we're not even thinking about ending them. Maybe I misunderstood.
I think someday they will end. But until that comes, if it comes, we need to have some way to readdress it and to give those people surety. And the surety is in the process of where we put them in the queue. In other words, and they get so far and they've paid their fees, I don't care.
So vested to a certain point.
Right.
Yeah. So, Tom, so the person who's...
Randy Prince gave me a timeline frame.
Oh, that's from a developer. Okay.
From
so
he's a land use attorney.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I know
him. So we're going to put something together and then run it by a few other land use attorneys to see if that works. And then we're going to readdress some type of a resolution make a resolution saying that we would readdress this issue 300 days out or something like that. We'll put the words together, but we'll come back with you.
Well, that's just on the developer side. Can we do something parallel internally that tells us what a time frame is or what?
Well, I'll give this to staff. I'm going to share this. That's the time frame.
Well,
each one.
So it's like all negotiations. So they have what they want, and they want vesting, and they want to know when they're vested for predictability.
Mm-hmm.
On our side, I don't think we've ever talked about if we were going to step down, if we were going to phase out, if we were going to end the TIF holiday. Not since I've been here, there's been no discussion about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And is there some kind of a schedule or a scale that we would do, and how would we do that? So they will tell us what their recommendation is, of course, which will be somewhat objective and somewhat self-interest. And then on our side, I'd like us to be doing the same thing.
Well, this would all be policy. When the fee waiver holiday was put in place, I wasn't in this job when that happened, but I did observe some of the events surrounding the fee holiday, namely public hearings. And I wasn't in the room when the sausage was being made, but I believe it was the policymakers who designed the program.
Yeah.
And if staff had input, they would listen. And if the staff's input was valuable, they'd take it. And if it wasn't, they wouldn't. I imagine the process would be very similar in this case. Any modifications to the program, since it's the policy of the board, would certainly be driven by the board, and staff would provide input when asked to.
Yeah. Can I say something?
Is that accurate?
Was it done by ordinance?
Resolution.
A resolution.
So built into the resolution is a trigger. And the intent of the resolution is to encourage those that create jobs by providing business to invest in this county. And the problem was employment versus unemployment. And so the trigger that's built in, that it actually written into the resolution, says that when Clark County unemployment rate becomes better than the state average, mm-hmm. then we will reconsider within, I think it's 30 or 60 days, I have to, it's been a while, the continuation. And we are certainly moving in the right direction. We've substantially improved from where we were. So there is a trigger. But that window of time, as we get better, is something that provides the uncertainty and the unpredictability for those that have not yet applied. Right. Because when they submit their application, that says they've already got their plans, they already got all their investment that could be hundreds of thousands of dollars with architects and engineering and all that, and that doesn't get vested until they submit that to us. This would encourage them, when they get their idea and they're working through their concepts, to ensure that that program that helps it to pencil out will be there when they submit their application, it's still there.
So if I could get a copy of that original resolution,
okay.
And whatever our code is for the requirements of at what point we consider an application vested. And that there can, different jurisdictions kind of have a little bit different requirements for either how complete or whatever. So whatever ours are by the objective standard for when it's considered vested. I think it's more than just being submitted.
We get the final plan and they give us the money.
Well, I want a chapter and verse in the code, but I'm sure you're pretty much right about that. How it usually is.
Close.
And because I want to start being more informed about this.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Thanks for the heads up.
One more follow-up. The last thing I heard about the Bolin thing, remember the Bolin property by the Klein Line Bridge? And we were going to find a way to transfer that strip of property over to him to fulfill his parking lot that we took away. Mm-hmm. And we ran into a problem there. So they were supposed to draft up a right of use.
I think it was a license. Yeah, right
of
way license.
Yeah.
Let me check on the status of that and see what we
okay.
did.
Yeah, I think that's done.
They never came back and told us what was going on.
Yeah, that was years ago. I thought that
well,
that was
been working
long
on that
ago
for 3 years.
Yeah.
Mere
wow.
3 years. We wanted to get rid of it because it had a liability to it. We had to maintain it just like we did a park, except this thing is like a 100 feet by mm-hmm. 30 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So, the other thing, I'd like to go back and Doug Lasher offered to give us information on how to access and look at the bidding process online where he sells property.
So why do we need that?
Because we were questioning some of the processes that they have. Why do they sell some of the property online and the other property at the gazebo?
Do you mean property that is being tax That's down here.
This isn't tax foreclosures.
That's not tax. What is that?
Trustee sales.
Hmm?
That would be trustee sales down there. The tax foreclosures they do twice a year online.
Online, using the online bidding.
How's that different? Because that's a county operation down there.
No.
These would be trustee sales, like for mortgages that go into foreclosure. It's a non-judicial foreclosure process.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, we just provide them the use of the gazebo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can I share something about that?
Yes.
I think what you're referring to is a result of, just to ensure that buyer beware.
That's where it came from.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We weren't, it didn't look like we were being fully forthright in the disclosure of what was obvious to staff here, and we had repeat customer or customer after customer, citizen
buying
after citizen, buying property, discovering what we should have revealed, and then having, and then losing their money, and it goes back to auction, and it happens to the next citizen. And the solution for that was to make sure that the information that is presented online makes clear up front what we forthrightly ought to disclose, so that they don't end up falling into the same trap, losing their money. So probably the most effective way to, and kind of take a quick snapshot on that to make sure that it's still there, if you could email us a link to that site that we potentially as buyers could look at, so that we could be forewarned if we're considering something.
The tax foreclosures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the tax foreclosure property, 90% of it is sold to sharks that are going to be out there painting a window sell and flipping it.
Who
cares if they get stuck? That's their business.
That's not been the case. We've had widows and people.
Are they acting as their own agent?
Yeah.
Well, that's not smart.
Well,
we can't protect people from imprudent.
It's true. However, what's happened in the past is that reasonable citizens ended up falling into an unnecessary trap because we knew something obvious. Everybody knew here obvious that there was something significantly wrong with that. You couldn't build on that property, a vacant lot. And we didn't reveal that. They bought it, lost their money, and it happened again, and it happened again.
So,
and we want to make sure that we don't allow that kind of disaster to happen to innocent buyers. And yes, we're not going on the line to say we're going to protect everybody.
Yeah.
But we're going to make sure that we at least reveal the obvious things and make it easy for them to discover on their own what potential they could fall into.
Here's the problem. The minute we take it upon ourselves to disclose, then we're obligated for full disclosure, because after all, you didn't tell me. You told me about one problem. You didn't tell me about the dry rot. And because you didn't give full disclosure, then it's the county's fault.
We're not doing that. We had this discussion, and there's nothing like that. So it's not going all that way down the road. What it does is it gives them the resources they need online more conveniently. It doesn't make us liable.
Do their own research.
Yes.
We don't have to
do what the
research.
Limitations might be.
If we know it's a non-buildable lot.
Yeah. Well, to notify somebody of that is different than if we are feeling responsible to sell them a sound structure.
No, we haven't gone there.
As long as we're not going down that road. I misunderstood.
Road.
If you're talking about obvious legal problems with impairment to the property that we're aware of, and it's in the record that it's an impairment.
Yes.
To notify somebody of that would be our responsibility. So you're not talking about the condition of a structure or any of the rest of
it. Let me put boundaries. And one boundary, we somehow go and say, we verified. We're guaranteeing this to be fully, and there's an expectation that we've revealed everything that we can reveal. That's absolutely not workable because we become liable. The other end is that we sell it, and we don't say anything. We don't make it convenient. They have to go do their homework, and we are no help whatsoever. And in between is a balance. And in the past, we've made it too easy to be over on this one side. So all this is moving a little bit more balance to the middle, toward the balance. This is we make it more convenient and more obvious for the citizens who are potential buyers to know how to do their research. That's all.
If we're aware of a significant impairment to the property, that's a legal impairment, to disclose that, I have no issue. That is a responsible thing to do.
Yeah.
If it goes past that, then
I'd
be
you.
Concerned.
I'm with you.
Okay.
And one other thing. I think we're waiting for a second opinion on the Dolly building.
I gave you the report by the consultant.
We had three
weeks ago. We've had the building appraised.
I think that's what we're waiting for.
Yeah. And
second appraisal.
The first appraisal. Mark Rauschenstein from the assessor's office did it for us at no cost.
Okay. And I think that's what we were looking for.
And so we have that available. And so what we're looking for out of the board is how do we bring forward the subject of disposing of that building and making a decision on whether to proceed. I know the report you have had two disposal methods or not disposal methods necessarily, but one was an outright sale, and then another option was a private, a public-private joint venture between the county and a developer to redevelop the property. And I know the sentiment of the board is that's private enterprise. We don't compete with private enterprise, and so
it's not our forte.
You could carry the contract to make some money.
So, you know, staff is looking for guidance from the board on that property and what the next steps are.
Yeah, I remember what it was. We had an appraisal that was $100,000 apart. And so we went back to staff to say, can you give us a better appraisal?
No, we did not have an appraisal done on that property. The report we got from the consultant gave us some ideas
of
what it might be worth, but
we haven't done a formal appraisal.
We got one from Mark down in the assessor's office, and his estimate.
Go ahead.
Yeah, he's a certified appraiser, so we can pay somebody big money to do it, or we can use our own in-house asset. His estimate of value is more favorable to the county than what's in the report we got from our consultant.
I'm sure that's true.
So let me summarize what I think the status that it is. The evaluation, the consultant recommended that we sell the building. We've got a price, an appraisal on the building, and so now it's a matter of what defining a process to put it on the market. So what do you need from us to make that happen?
If the board wants to dispose of the building, then we would retain the services of a marketing agent to do so.
Okay. Do you agree? Do you feel like, yeah, we can put that money to better use somewhere?
I would want to know what the plan for the proceeds would be,
because the
cash flow from the Dolly building is used by, it used to be Bob, now it's Adriana, to pay debt service on the PSC and the parking structure.
Yeah.
And so what I would propose is
a conversation, I think.
Yeah. What we would propose is that we take the average net revenue from the building, which is about $185,000 a year, and if we have 10 years remaining on the debt, that we would set aside 10 times 185, and if we sold the building for 3.5, we take the $1,850,000 and set it aside so that Bob could continue to use that for debt service for the next 10 years until the debt's retired. And then any difference between the purchase price and that amount would then be available to replace our antiquated phone system or another board priority.
I'd like to get sort of all that.
Yeah, this is an impromptu conversation. It might be that
we're a long ways away, and that's not the reason I brought it up.
Well, no, I understand that, but. Yeah. All this information, if we could see it together in one place, I'd like to start thinking about this. And then maybe Bob or Adriana can start talking to us about what the pros and cons are for how that money
I'm
going, might
I'm going to throw another wrench into that.
Sure.
Along the way, because of the vacancy we had down there, we were going to move the youth commission down there. We were considering moving down there to see if it would work. We never got that far, but the reason we were looking at moving it was because of the high cost overhead that we have renting a house downtown here for the youth commission. And it's like, what was it?
It's $40,000 a year, I think.
Yeah, we should have bought it a long time ago. We didn't. So we were looking for a more affordable place for the youth commission. And I don't think we have vacancies in this building anymore that would work.
No, and the board
that's
would have
not to. Suitable for youth commission anyway. And even the Dolly building, it's too formal of a building for kids that are going to be there doing projects on the weekend. I mean, most business buildings are organized per the tenant. So if we sold the Dolly building and wanted to lease back space, I don't know how that would work.
We don't want to do that. We're already set. So unless we, whatever, move the rent from one place to the other, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Be uncumbersome. But it's something that, where I was going with this, is that we need to be looking, if we decide to sell that, and if we can't do this, what are we going to do with the youth commission to make that more affordable?
And the other thing is, are we sure that we're not going to outgrow our space here? And if we were, would we have a prediction? I mean, as things get, we still have a lot of business that needs to be done by human beings. It's not done by technology or computers or anything else. We still have a fair amount of work that's done by humans. And Clark County is growing. So the other thing about the Dolly building that I think is would, and I don't even know, it's pretty a fair distance from here. So it's not like you can run down the block with, you know, to have a meeting and talk to somebody. But
well, we used to have county offices in that building, and when I was in Public Works, I did hike down that hill on many occasions to meet with people.
So it can be done, but I would want to make sure that we're forecasting our current space needs.
We're not there yet. We have all this stuff is up in the air.
Yeah.
And it sounds to me like I have to go to my desk for the appraisal and the report.
No, you have the report. The appraisal was that yay thick. I would rather.
Is there a summary?
I would rather circulate that than make copies of it. So there is a recap at the front. I'll make a copy of that, and then I'll circulate the entire document.
And it also depends what we do with it. I mean, my thought would be if we liquidate the asset, then it needs to be to 100% to pay off this building, because that's the revenue that we're making payments from.
And that might be feasible, but
yeah.
I would like, and I think normally if you can use money to pay debt, it's usually a good idea, but I'd like to also hear from our finance people.
Sure.
What their assessment.
Do I have anything else?
We have a couple more properties that are in the works, but
yeah, we have an auction tomorrow. The bids close tomorrow on two properties.
Which ones?
Highway 99 and 88th.
All right.
And then a 26-acre parcel in North County
North
that is zoned R10. So you could split that into two, 13, or you know, a 12 and a 14.
So we're looking at if it was Conservation Futures or if it was
it's not
Public Works. It goes back to that department for the
right.
other project.
Yeah, the proceeds go to the fund that owns the parcel.
How do I get on the mailing list for every time that we are surplusing property that I get an email? How does that happen?
Well, we just have to tell Steve Hansen if
okay.
we're surplusing a property.
Okay, let me change the question. How do commissioners know on a routine basis what property
we need permission from the board to declare the property surplus.
I've never declared a certain parcel surplus and some, well, that's not true. Some utility and road, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about property that we call surplus and that we're going to sell.
I thought the 41st Avenue property, whatever that is, was declared surplus on the consent agenda recently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think our code requires the board to declare the property surplus. We can't just on our own.
Here's not at the time of action, but when it's proposed. How do I know when it's proposed?
Because we come to you in a formal setting and ask for permission to.
What document do you give me that tells
staff report.
Me that? And did I have a staff report on the 41st Avenue?
Mm-hmm. Do you recall?
Yeah, it would have been part of the consent agenda.
Yeah, but what date do you remember?
I don't remember what the report looked like. But.
And the other thing for very old, Highway 99 and 88th Street.
Yeah. What I'm trying to get at, Tom, is here we talk about
I hear what you're saying,
about property. It might be sold. We could, here this could go on the market. We could trade this for this. Rather than just having the discussion about it here, I'd rather be able to look at the stuff on a more proactive basis than a reactive basis. So I'm trying to figure out how I can do that.
The normal process is staff says surplus.
Where do we have it in a code what the process is? I'll just go to the county code.
Yeah, we have a property management section.
I have
copies for that.
Okay. Now, just tell me what the code section is. Okay. I know you can find it in no time.
I'll have to look it up.
It says that we're supposed to use it for best use. Summary. About three paragraphs long.
And that's our formal established county policy for surplusing and selling property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I hear what you're saying, though.
2.33, property management. 2.33A.
In the past, when I've asked for excess property, got that?
Yeah.
In the past, when I asked for excess property, what we as policymakers thought was excess, staff didn't necessarily agree.
Exactly.
So we went out and started fighting it. Then after we found it, then staff says, "Oh, you're right. Yeah, that could be excess."
But we did create a comprehensive list, did we not?
No, they gave us a real brief summary to include our parks, and I said, "We're not selling our parks."
So. Okay.
We'll get there.
Okay. It'll
come here.
I'm done.
Okay. I'm afraid to ask a question anymore.
I can just add, there are two checks for the council when it comes to selling property. We can talk about it all we want, but staff will come and you'll have an opportunity to declare a property surplus.
Yes.
Then they'll go sell it, and then you will also approve the sale after that's done.
So. Just for thoroughness, either Peter or Mark, you guys work together, to just email us a copy of that agenda item that surplused, that where we authorized that sale.
We just did that.
I know.
I don't remember when we discussed it in advance, but we've had many properties, maybe half a dozen that we've talked about in here over the last few months.
Okay. Anything else, Peter?
No.
Mark, you got anything?
No, sir.
Okay. All right. I don't have anything. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.